Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 28th day of September 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. He'll take us through the picture he thinks the markets are painting right now. We'll also catch up with Matt Bennett. He's on the combine again this afternoon, taking in soybeans for the day. He should finish up pretty shortly, he believes, and we'll hear about that and what he thinks about the cash grain market. We'll hear from another farmer also on the combine yesterday afternoon on my way back from Geneseo, Illinois, where we saw the installation of that wood chip bioreactor. And if you want to see the video from that, you can do that now at willag.org. I stopped in Knox County in Roseville to talk to the American Soybean Association president, Farmer Ron Moore. We had a really good discussion that laid out the agenda items for ASA this fall as it relates to farm policy in Washington, D.C. And as we wrap up our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast too. Mike Tenora will be here from T-Storm in Chicago, Illinois. I'm out of the office this afternoon, so no update of the commodity markets, at least as they traded at the end of the day.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let me take a moment now to thank you for listening to our ag programming. Thank you. I mean it. Really. Thank you for listening to the programming. And just as a reminder, here's what you hear each and every business day. We start at 8:55 a.m. with the opening market report, including Aaron Curtis, Pete Manhart, Bill Gentry, Ellen Dearden, and Bill Mayer. And then an update at 10:58 a.m. with five other voices, Joe Vaklevic, Greg Ginder, Merrill Crowley, Chip Nellinger, and Steve Georgie, followed up at 12:58 each and every business day with Sue Martin, and then, of course, the closing market report, including our analysts Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, Jackie Vakes, Dan Zwicker, and Mike Zuzalem. And we wrap up each week by recording Commodity Week on Thursday evening. You can hear it at willag.org that night or on Friday afternoon at 2:36. Oh, and don't forget that we also have a whole series of regularly scheduled analysts during the closing market report for weather. Those include meteorologist on Monday, Mark Russo, Tuesday, Don Day, Wednesday, Drew Lerner, Thursday, Mike Tenora, and on Friday afternoon, both Jim Angel and Eric Snodgrass. Our term of the day is hedge as it relates to agricultural commodity price hedging. A typical hedger might be a commercial farmer, so the market value of wheat, for instance, and other crops fluctuates constantly as supply and demand for them vary, with occasional large moves in either direction. Based on current prices and forecast levels at harvest time, the farmer might decide that planting wheat, for instance, is a good idea one season, but the forecast prices are only that, forecast. Once the farmer plants wheat, he's committed to it for the entire season. If the actual price of wheat greatly rises between planting and harvest, the farmer stands to make a lot of unexpected money. But if the actual price drops by harvest time, he could be ruined. If at planting time the farmer sells a number of wheat futures contracts equivalent to his anticipated crop size, he effectively locks in the price of wheat at that time. The contract is an agreement to deliver a certain number of bushels of wheat to a specified place on a certain date in the future for a certain fixed price. The farmer has hedged his exposure to wheat prices. He no longer cares whether the current price rises or falls because he is guaranteed a price by the contract. He no longer needs to worry about being ruined by a low wheat price at harvest time, but he also gives up the chance at making extra money from a high wheat price at harvest time. However, in the case of a farmer, it must be noted that the hedge introduces another kind of risk. If the farmer has contracted to sell all his expected crop but then has a bad year, for instance, a year with lower than expected yields, such that his farm is not able to produce the committed quantity, he may have to purchase replacement crop at a disadvantageous price to fulfill his futures contract. And that's our trading term for the day, hedge, as it relates to agricultural commodities.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker is now here from Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Good afternoon, Dan. Just up front, you and I are recording a bit early because, well, about now I should be somewhere south of Springfield, I hope, headed to the Cub-Cardinal game in St. Louis tonight. In the mean space, though, we probably ought to take some time and talk a little bit about where you think this market is and what that might mean technically and how you view tomorrow's grain stocks report. Let's start on the technical side. You want to start with corn, the soybeans, or the wheat?
Well, we'll start with soybeans because that's still the most bullish and the one that holds out probably the more promising for maybe some kind of rally here down the road. A lot of that, of course, will probably depend upon what we see in the grain stocks report and probably more so than anything, maybe the October 12th crop report, because we could see acreage changes and, you know, who knows what we're hearing on the yield. I guess from what I'm hearing anyway on the guys that are harvesting, the soybean yields seem to be fairly stout. So I guess I wouldn't expect to see any decline in yield from what USDA had in September, but you never know, I guess. But soybeans, we still have another day or two, another day here to go. Today's close and see what happens on Friday. Friday's close will probably be dependent upon what USDA says tomorrow on their stocks report. But I'm in the opinion that stocks reports, for the most part, explain why the market did what it did over the past 30 days, more so than what is going to tell you what the market's going to do during the next 30 days. So I think unless there's a real shocker of some kind, I think most of the bearishness or whatever, I think most of the impact of the report is pretty well priced into the market. And I think that kind of explains why soybeans have been able to, at least up to this point, we're still higher for the month of September. Corn is still lower for the month of September. And then we'll start October. Normally, we kind of find seasonal lows in soybeans during the first 10 days or so of October. Corn sometimes will bottom in that first 10 days, but then maybe comes back for a double bottom. Maybe as we go into the delivery period in December, depending upon how harvest goes. But corn harvest is running behind a couple weeks, probably behind average. Soybeans, the way everybody's going at it, it might be up to average or even above average maybe by Monday. But at the end of the day, we've got a large crop and carryover numbers. You know, I'm not going to quibble over 50 million here or 100 million there with these kind of levels. We just got a lot of crop, and we're going to have a weather issue come along in South America or next spring here in North America, probably to excite this market or get the market worried about declining inventories. But right at the moment, you know, we're into harvest. We got seasonal pressure. I see Central Illinois cash corn prices is down in that $3 level. One would think that's cheap enough, but we really haven't begun to see any harvest pressure on corn, so I don't know what that means. Beans are still hanging fairly strong. We still have above $9 cash bids. And we may even have better cash bids after tomorrow's report, depending upon what number it gives us on that. We had big, strong export sales here this morning on soybeans. Corn was disappointing, and I think that's the biggest problem. Just about every place in the United around the world, we have an adequate supply of corn, and that's what's going to be a difficulty, I think, to get the corn market to to show much life, but I haven't given up that something can come and kind of come along in here and kind of lift us higher, more so during the first half of next year, probably, than probably over the next 30 days or 60 days. But I do think there is going to be smaller corn and bean acres because of the larger spring wheat acres this year. So there, you know, soybeans still probably have the biggest driving force, but that'll be dependent upon what happens in South America. And this is a La Nina year. So you can't have weather issues in South America, and that may stir up the pot to get some kind of rally.
When you look forward, and you've mentioned a couple of times the October World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate Report, the crop production numbers that are due out not long after we get into the month of October, this one sometimes changes a lot of things. Do you expect very many changes? Of course, if USDA is going to update acreage, that's normally where it would take place. They have the FSA numbers calculated by then. Yields are well documented usually at that point as well.
Yeah, I don't see a shocker, but I think there is some indication that we may see a bubble up on soybean acres. I don't know for sure. We may see some adjustments in harvested acres because we had a lot of flooding, you know, in the early planting part of the season. But I don't look for it to be a shocker, so I guess that's maybe why it might be a shocker. But I just don't see how we shock the system with this type of supply. We've got a lot of bearishness in the market, and even if it would come on in on the bullish side, I don't see how it changes the bigger picture. It could generate a day or two of short covering if it came in on the bullish side. If it came in on the bearish side, we'd maybe see a day or two of long liquidation, but I think it would be quickly absorbed. Especially, you know, when I look at current day prices. But I always know, when, you know, in bear markets, prices always go cheaper than what you think. In a bull market, they always go higher than what you think. So, you know, until we do get a seasonal low in place, I guess we still have downside price vulnerabilities due to production estimates. But some of the yields I've been hearing, I just don't see how USDA is going to bring the yields down. If anything, the yields could go up from here. But like I said, I don't look for any shockers anyway.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Very well.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Up next, a conversation with Ron Moore. He's a farmer in Knox County and president of the American Soybean Association. I rode a few rounds on the combine with him yesterday afternoon. We're here outside of Roseville, Illinois, with Ron Moore. He's the president of the American Soybean Association and combining soybeans today. Thanks for being with us. What's on the top of the agenda list for ASA this year?
Well, right now we're really worried about the farm bill because of the financial situation in agriculture right now. We need to get the farm bill done as quickly as possible. There's some things that need to be adjusted. No big major changes that we foresee, but you know, we want to make sure that the RMA yields are used instead of the National Ag Statistic yields. Take some discrepancies from one county to the next, and if there's not enough farmers that are reporting on the NAS yields, why it doesn't make any sense to do it that way. So we're suggesting using the RMA yields. So there's a lot of other organizations that are also. We're also looking to double the FMD and MAP funding, the Foreign Market Development and the Market Access Program. And one of the things that we've talked about is that we don't have our competition. The European Union, for example, spends over $1 billion, and we're just a short $200 million. So we need to make those changes. And as long as the government has decided not to participate in some of these trade agreements, well, that's fine. But let's spend the money where it's got a history of being very successful, and that's promoting U.S. ag products overseas. Soybeans are particularly beneficial to having those funds to promote. 60% of the soybeans that we raise in the United States go into the export market.
What kind of discussions have you at the ASA had about cottonseed and its entrance potentially into the Title I programs or ARC and PLC?
Well, we're supporting of putting that in as long as it doesn't take money from other commodity programs. When one sector of agriculture is not flourishing and successful, it drags all the rest of them down, but just too much drama going on. And let's face it, we're all in this agriculture sector together, and so we want to make sure cotton farmers are able to be successful, because they also grow other crops besides cotton. And you know, we talk about cotton too, but the dairy program needs to be looked at as well. They've not been able to take advantage of the last program that they had in the 2014 Farm Bill, and so we want to make sure that they also have the ability to get some protection from these low prices.
From the University of Illinois campus, there's been quite a bit of at least optimism that this year in the Farm Bill debate that there's much more discussion about research and research dollars and land grant institutions. Why has that happened, and will it come to any fruition in terms of monies for research on campuses?
Well, I think that the reason it's become such a big topic is because we've been woefully underfunding research, public research, for the last 20 years. And so as you look at some of the issues that are in agriculture right now, it's important that the land-grant universities continue to be viable to be able to have this people in place that we are able to do the research that needs to be done. You know, we've got Ted McKinney and Bill Northey and Steve Senske that are in the queue to be appointed to be some of the undersecretaries and the deputy secretary of agriculture. You know, as Secretary Perdue mentioned at the Farm Progress Show, he needs help. And it's bewildering to the agriculture sector why it's taken so long to get these undersecretaries and the deputy secretary confirmed in the Senate.
Well, one final question. Are you worried very much about NAFTA and trade in general?
Yeah, we are. You know, NAFTA has benefited agriculture immensely in the last 23 years. We understand that there are sectors in the U.S. economy that need to be fine-tuned, so to speak. But let's not do any harm to agriculture, because it's been a huge benefit for farmers to be able to trade with Mexico and Canada. They're the number two and number three importer of U.S. soybeans behind China. And so we want to make sure that there's no harm done to those agreements. And speaking of China, why, you know, they're the number one importer of U.S. soybeans. And so let's not do anything that's going to disrupt that trade flow. They are very much in need of our soybeans, and soybean farmers are very happy to be able to provide them with a nutritious protein source.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd. Glad to see you.
That, of course, is Ron Moore. He is the president of the American Soybean Association.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families for more than 100 years. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Matt Bennett now joins us to take a look at the cash grain market. Matt, thanks so much. How have the crops been harvesting so far in your area?
Well, everything's coming out awfully fast, of course, with the way that this weather has been treating us. You know, it seems like the earliest yields for both corn and beans were pretty much phenomenal. Everyone was really happy with them for the most part, much better than expected. People scratching their heads as to how we could go a couple of months without moisture and still have some of the bean yields we've seen, but we've done it. And I think that the cool August kind of helped out a little bit. It seems to me like the farther we get into harvest, the yields are definitely scaling back off, which makes really good sense considering how dry we were late in the season. But yields are still pretty competitive, pretty solid. And I think that most producers in my part of the world are going to be pretty darn happy, at least with their yield.
The last two Thursdays we've talked with you, you've been in soybeans. How about this week?
We're in beans for today, and then we'll be in corn pretty much. We've only got about a day left of bean cutting, but they're in river bottoms. They're not quite ready to go. And so we'll be back in the corn for several days. So I don't know. We've got quite a bit of corn to pick, and it's pretty good corn from what I gather. So it's not going to probably go super fast, but we'll definitely get to find out here just how good some of this later. About all of our corn, you know, was planted in that 13th through the 16th of April. But we'll get into some fields that's got a little bit of replant in it, and we'll kind of see what those are made of.
What are you thinking about tomorrow's grain stocks report?
Yeah, I feel like there's always an opportunity for some surprises with this report. I don't know at this point of the game if I want to be overly exposed as a producer. It's not that I want to be bearish by any means, but if I'm a producer that's got you know, really good yields, I guess I should probably be cognizant of the fact that we could come up with a few more bushels. We'd probably be a little bit more worried about corn than beans. But for the most part, I think that you can see a bearish surprise, especially when it comes to corn.
How's basis in your area been reacting to the harvest season?
Well, basis continues to weaken just a little bit here and there. I think, you know, what I'm hearing across the Corn Belt, there are some horror stories. And I feel like my area has held in there a whole lot better than some areas. I have heard about guys getting charged 35, 40 cents just to dump, and that'll get them out to Jan 1. We don't have that to deal with, thank goodness, where I'm at, but I don't think that you're going to have anywhere that you're going to see competitive basis levels at this time of year with the amount of old crop that we're carrying in to a big crop.
Any advice for producers as they begin the harvest season?
Yeah, you know, I think that we need to be cognizant of what our true dollars are if we're harvesting better crops than what we thought we were. If we plug that into a profitability spreadsheet, realize that we can live with that income. They want to go ahead and lock that in and participate in the market later if they want to take a look from the long side. Because you know, if the yields continue to come in where they're coming in, I think that it's we're running the risk of the USDA raising both corn and bean yields potentially in October.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you being with us. Be safe.
Yep, thank you, Todd.
That, of course, is Matt Bennett with Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to helping farm families succeed by offering financial products and services geared specifically to agriculture and rural communities, and developing partnership-based relationships with its member owners.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. If not there, you can always listen to us through iTunes, the Google Play Store, one of my favorite ways, by using the NPR One app. And you can find us in Stitcher as well. We post most, if not all, of our programming in its entirety to our website and to those outlets not long after it airs on our radio stations. Again, if you want to find them and listen to them, you can do that on our website at willag.org, in iTunes, Google Play, NPR One, and Stitcher. When we come back, we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast with Mike Tenora from T-Storm.
It's National Cherry Turnover Day. It's also St. Augustine of Hippo's Day, patron of brewers. On this day in agricultural history in 1798, the first American vineyard was planted in Lexington, Kentucky. A Frenchman named John Dufour accepted the challenge by the Wine Industry Association of Kentucky to introduce commercial winemaking in the U.S. The first crop was a great success, but that was the last year the vineyard bore fruit. Disease plagued the grapes, and Dufour eventually moved on to Indiana. By the way, a small portion of the grapes at the Lexington site eventually made it to the table of Thomas Jefferson. In 1837, John Leah and William Perrins of Worcester, England, started manufacturing Worcester sauce. The first product was so strong that it was considered inedible, and a barrel of the offending brew was exiled to Leah and Perrins' basement. A few years later, needing space for storage, the two decided to move the barrel, but gave it one more try, discovering the sauce had fermented and mellowed. In 1875, Stephen McCormick died. He was the inventor and manufacturer of a cast iron plow with removable parts. And in 2002, Spaniards threw 120 tons of tomatoes at each other at the annual Tomanita Festival in Buenos, Spain. The annual tomato fight is the biggest food fight in the world. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for agricultural weather on WILL comes from the Friends of WILL and from Busey, giving more than $1 million in countless volunteer hours annually to make a positive difference in our communities. Busey, your dream, our promise.
This is the Closing Mark Report for Thursday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Mike Tenora. He's at T-Storm Weather out of Chicago to take a look at the weather forecast for harvest conditions across the Midwest, some planting conditions as well in South America. Let's start in the Western Corn Belt. Looks like they might be getting a little rainfall. Can you tell me about it, please?
Well, they had a lot of rain earlier in the week, and there is quite a bit more coming up. All that rain, though, is going to hold off here for a few days. So mainly dry conditions across all of the Corn Belt through about Saturday. Then we'll start to see a few showers and thunderstorms pop up in the west. As we go into next week, we'll see several systems crash through the northern plains and then make their way into the northwest Corn Belt. That's going to end up producing quite a bit of rain across the northwest half of the Corn Belt, including Minnesota, western Iowa, the Dakotas, Nebraska, and Kansas. These states here will see anywhere from 1 to 2 inches of rain next week. So we think that even though conditions at the moment are improving, they will start to deteriorate once we get into later next week. And that's despite a lot of warm weather that will be accompanying the rain.
It has been really good harvest conditions in the eastern part of the Corn Belt over the last several days, even a couple of weeks, if folks have been able to get started. The dry down really happened fast with those warm temperatures. Do we see sunny skies and decent temperatures over the next week and a half here?
We certainly do. The first thing we have to get through, though, is some coolness. That's taking place today, tomorrow, and even into Saturday. Once we get into Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, though, things will start to change a lot. We won't pop back into the 90s like we did earlier this week, but certainly we'll get into the 70s and 80s across a large area. And the way it looks right now, that is going to continue right on through the first 7 to 10 days of October. So we don't have any frost or freeze threats on the immediate horizon, and we do have a lot of above normal temperatures coming up. That will be combining with dry weather on top of it. So pretty much the same story we've had lately, Todd. It will be dry. It will be warm. That includes the Delta and the southeast half of the Corn Belt. So that's good news for corn and soybean harvesting and, of course, winter wheat planting as well.
There has been concern for the past several weeks about Mato Grosso and the start of its planting season. Will the rains fall finally?
They certainly will, and we haven't been too concerned about it for the simple reason that they don't start to get a lot of rain in those areas of Brazil until the last 7 to 10 days of September, which is why it's about to rain there now, and then more so in October, which is why more rain is coming up early next week. We're looking for a fairly widespread rainfall of 1 to 3 inches across most of the key growing areas of Brazil. That's over the next 5 days. So things will stabilize there in the near term. There's not a lot of rain behind it, so that will be another topic of discussion, I suppose, next week. But you have to keep in mind that October is one of the transitional months between the very distinct dry season that exists earlier in the year and the upcoming rainy season that begins in earnest in about 8 weeks. So you see a big rain in October, and then all of a sudden it dries out for 10 days. That's just the way it works there. and eventually we'll start to get another big rain later next month.
Mike Tenores with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.